Welcome to Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of Valerie, her guests, and callers. Now here's your host, Valerie Kirkgaard.
I am your host. I'm Valerie Kirkgaard. You are listening to Waking Up in America, our American Cafe. This is Wednesday, August the 15th, and this is a very important day for a number of reasons. One, Dr. Eric Pearl is here. Two, Gail Ellen and Debbie Ringshop will be coming in at certain times during this. We're all going to roll at a kind of frantic schedule today. And last I heard, Dr. Eric Pearl was running up the staircase to get to his office so that he can call in and be part of the program here. So we're really glad to have you today, and I'm very happy because my birthday is coming up on Saturday, and I will have made it to 72 pretty sassy as far as I'm concerned. So it's a pleasure. Gail Ellen has been a friend for years, so has dear Debbie Ringchop. And CW is on our Saturday show. He's out doing work for the Republic right now. It's just an incredibly exciting time to be alive and active here. Many of you have heard the show that we did with Randy
Dr.
Shannon.
Dr. Pearl is on.
Oh, right. Many of you have heard the show we did with Randy Shannon a couple of weeks ago. That's been really pivotal in people coming over and joining the Republic and joining us. And on last Saturday's show on Our American Cafe out of Albuquerque, we had the privilege and the fun of bringing Dr. Eric Pearl back again. For many of you, you know that he's the author of The Reconnection. It actually says heal yourself and heal others, but I think the truth of the matter here is actually it's how to actually put your hands on the strings or the cords of divinity. And he shows you how to do that in a very interesting way, a kind of more of an experiential way. And we'll be interviewing Dr. Pearl in just a few minutes, so get your friends together and tell them to hook in and listen. And if you miss this broadcast for some reason, you can come back in about 3 or 4 hours, and it will be in the replay section. Just go to the website, and you can click on that, and you can get there. Just so many good things are happening in the world right now, and I'm very delighted to say that Gail and I went to the Beverly Hills Hotel. And, Gail, I was wondering if you could just let our listeners know what we were up to and what we had in mind there.
Well, you know, we were up to restoring elegance and glamour and some old Hollywood by visiting and seeing the aqualilies, some absolutely wonderful synchronized swimmers. Ballet swimming had all to do with the Olympics, and it was just a really stunning, stunning event.
How many? There were about 8 or 9 of them. Did you remember, Gail?
Yes, that's how many there were.
And yeah, 8 or 9. All... Here's the interesting thing about these. For those of us that are older and feel as though we've lost elegance because it's dying away and we're sick of people clomping around in Bermuda shorts and snapping their gums at the opera and things of that nature, you don't have to worry because the aqualilies actually reflect the 1940s, and they're all between 18 and 23 years old, and they are all as beautiful and charming, as talented as you ever could imagine, and they were inspired by the great Esther Williams, whose 91st birthday was last Wednesday. So the old times will not be forgotten. The Beverly Hills Hotel stands for it, and a number of places stand for it, and what Gail and I are standing for and Waking Up in America is standing for, and all the different people here are standing for, is a return to quality for everyone. You know, an absolutely A1 plus quality life for everyone. There doesn't have to be a richer and a poorer. There actually is a way to reach frequency. And once you reach frequency, these things start to come to you because that's part of how it works. There's just been a lot of deception going on. And one of the beautiful things about Dr. Eric Pearl, God bless his heart, he's straight to the point. You go to one of his introductions and you, if you're open, you'll actually end up going home and at least having a temporary high, something so that you know you can do something than you knew before. Eric, honest to God, that's what happened to me. I went home and I started feeling things with my animals and my son and things like that when I would move around him, and I went, I haven't even taken the class yet. So just welcome to Waking Up in America. We're so pleased to have you with us today.
Well, thank you. I'm glad I can be here.
So I called this program about divinity, okay? Hooking up with divinity. Wouldn't you say that's more about what we're doing than, quotes, healing?
Absolutely it is. Healing is not my favorite word because it's got so much limitation in the baggage that it carries. It makes us feel as if we have to get over something, regain the use of an arm or a leg, you know, recover from something. But really, healing is so much more. It's about our human evolution into becoming more spiritual, more divine beings, more in touch, more intuitive, more, I don't like to use the word psychic because of the baggage that carries too, but more aware multidimensionally.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. I think if I was to give you a name for your new book, which I'm not, because I'll probably use it for an article myself, but it would be something like, it's all about frequency.
It is.
And
it's,
I was
about,
wondering if you could expand on that and if you could include the soul as you talk about that, I would so appreciate it.
You know, maybe one of the ways to go into this, and please forgive me, Valerie, because I've done so many interviews since our last one, and I don't want to repeat what we've done in our last one, but did we discuss a little bit of my birth process through my mother's life-after-death experience? Because that might help us.
No, we did not, and I would love to hear about that.
Sure.
I think that kind of loops in, perhaps, Doctor, to actually the rare gift that you actually do have.
It very well may. What happened was that my mother was lying on the delivery table, and as she was lying there with all the doctors and nurses moving around the room, she started to hear and feel motors, very loud motors, starting at her feet, I think the soles of her feet, moving the tops of her feet and her ankles and up towards her knees. And she really, she couldn't understand why no one else in the room seemed to notice or be disturbed by this sound. And she couldn't really bring it to anyone's attention. And as it progressively moved up her body, she was afraid. Well, she knew that if it got to her heart, she would die. And, of course, she didn't want to die. She was giving birth to her first child. And it kept moving up and moving up, and there's nothing she could do about it. The next thing she knew, it was at her heart, and she was leaving her body. And she found herself passing through levels, layers of beings. The first level or layer of beings, or she says, you know, we don't really have the words for these things. It's the whole second chapter in my book. It was the most difficult chapter to write because I just spend so much time with my mother on the phone trying to get the words right, even though, as she would explain, we don't really have the words for this here. And she explained that as she went to the first level of beings, that was pretty much the people who either didn't seem to realize that they had died or felt that their work here was incomplete and they were staying around to do their work.
Huh.
Now, this does sound a little similar to what some people describe as ghosts. I'm not sure. But the second level, she doesn't recall. The third level, she recalls very strongly because it was very uncomfortable. It was uncomfortable for her to pass through, it's uncomfortable for us to pass through, and it's very uncomfortable for the people who are on that level. These are the people who have done the one thing that we could do to temporarily interrupt God's plan. They've taken their own lives. And although they were there for a prolonged period of time, she did feel that they would eventually move beyond that and continue on.
May I just comment on that right there?
Sure.
One of the things that when I spent 30 years as a marriage, family, child counselor, and one of the things that I always told people when they were being suicidal, I explained to them that if they ever were successful at ending their lives, they would actually have to come back again, and they would have to not only have the issues that had caused them to commit suicide in the first place, they would actually have more to deal with. So it wasn't really a cure. It was simply something that prolonged agony and would end up costing them later. So I just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah, that's pretty much the way I would tend to understand it, too.
Dr. Pearl, could you just sort of go over that third level again as it was described?
She said it was the one level that was difficult for those of us who die to pass through, very uncomfortable, and uncomfortable for those who were
there
on that level
at
the same time, because they were the ones who did the only thing we could do to...
Yeah.
I said, is it cheat? She said, it's not really cheat. It's temporarily interrupt God's plan. That's
mm-hmm.
the best she could understand it.
Yes.
But she
maybe
did
pause.
Feel that people did eventually move
get out of there.
Beyond that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And continue.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm not sure if it was the next level, or but soon she got to a level where she found herself moving down a path. She wasn't exactly walking. Her feet weren't moving. She was sort of gliding along a lane, which she felt was the lane, was what most people refer to as that tunnel.
Yep.
That they passed through. She was gliding down that lane towards a light. It was a very bright light. It was so bright she was afraid to look at it. She didn't want to open her eyes and look at it because she thought it would burn her eyes, but she did finally look, and it didn't burn her eyes, and she realized that there was nothing physical to burn, nothing to hurt. She passed flowers of colors she had never before seen. She recognized people for who they were. We could take one look at someone and see them for who that person is, not what they look like or what they're thinking. That one look could convey volumes of information. She realized how ridiculous it is for us to judge people on their physical appearance, on what they look like. She knew that there was only one regret that people who die have, and that regret is that those of us who are left behind mourn them, because we don't realize what a beautiful place it is that we all go to, that it's that place that we all come from, that place we all return to. It's truly home. And when she was there, her life was laid out before her, and she knew it was a good life, although there was no judgment, which sounds contradictory, but it isn't. She said, you understand it there. You understand when you're there that there is a reason for everything, and everything makes perfect sense. How we, why the earth is round, why the sky is blue, why the grass is green, how we can't blame God for seemingly horrible events that we're tempted to blame God for, such as drive-by shootings and other awful things. What else? She was just given all the secrets and insights of the universe. Her life was laid out before her. It was a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful place, and she was absolutely in love with it. And being there was so exquisite, and yet suddenly she found herself being sent back.
Yep.
And for all the struggling and all the fighting she did not to die in the first place, now she was fighting not to leave. She didn't want to leave, but she was told she had to return to raise her son. And she knew she was programmed to forget all the information that she was given, because once you're there, you realize that there's a reason for everything, and everything does make perfect sense. But all the information, most of the information she had, was programmed out of her, and she struggled to hold on to and retain the bits and pieces that she did retain. As a matter of fact, when she came to and she was in her bed, she looked at the woman, you know, next to her, and she thought to herself, oh my God, what an ugly woman. And then she laughed. She said, now didn't I just learn better than that? Didn't I just learn better than that?
Well, I was going to say, it's in the DNA, you know?
No, really. I mean, so many things go on in that space. She remembers while she was lying in the space, while they were telling her to bear down to give birth to me, that she heard some woman screaming in another room and go, that woman's really making a fool of herself, isn't she? And then she realized it was her.
No, I was just thinking that you really had a good head start.
Apparently, I had something.
I think you had a leading edge start right there.
When the woman in the next bed talked to her, she said, you were reciting scripture in tongues. My mother doesn't know the Bible in English, and she doesn't know any other languages, she doesn't really know, you know, how or where that came from. But, yeah, I was attached to her during that time, during that awareness. And when she came out of it, she had lost her fear of death. And when she explained that story to me, I mean, she talked about it a little bit when it first happened, but we didn't have Elizabeth Kubler-Ross or Raymond Moody or Daniel Brinkley or any of the people who are chronicling these things that we have today. So it was a relatively unheard of occurrence, and people looked at her as if she was a little bit off in telling that story, so she stopped telling it. But at some point in time, when I was, I don't know how old, 5 or so, I asked about death because, you know, my concern was, do you just end up in a little box buried under the ground and then there you are? What a horrible thought. And she explained this to me, and when she told me, I lost my fear of death too. As a matter of fact, I look forward to being there. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't look forward to ending my life early. I have plenty of things I want to be doing here. I have lots to do here. I don't plan on hurrying up to get there, but I also look forward to that experience when I am there.
Me, absolutely too. One of the things that happened for me last weekend is something that I would call naming, Eric. That's what I got from a forum leader. I met this man who was the son of a man who has written some really interesting pamphlet on God. And when I was talking to this gentleman, I said to him, "This is so strange. I feel like I'm talking to Jesus." And he goes, "You are." And I thought, okay, fine. And I got Jesus' cell phone number, and I told him I wanted to play games with him, and I found out that he played the piano and he did all this other stuff. And when I talked to him as Jesus, he responded as Jesus. So I got really excited because there was a room full of people there. And I went out and I told them all, I said, Jesus is available to us in the other room. And I didn't say too much, but the presence was so strong, I just felt like letting them know. Well, they first of all, they told me they were too busy to go and talk to Jesus. And then I told them that it would really be a good idea, but to make sure not to call him his name, David, because if they talked to him as David, they would get David, okay? And if they talked to him as... See, I got Jesus because I felt it, and then I asked it, and then I was verified. So Jesus isn't just in one place, or that energy that we're talking about today. These divine transmissions do not just live in one person. Your mother was the person that was doing it. She was transmitting whatever she was transmitting, and that's why I was so interested in getting the title for this. So to make a long story short, the ones that finally agreed to go and talk to him refused to call him Jesus or Christ because that was silly. So they said... So none of them had the experience of talking to Jesus. Then I told Jesus that we in the Republic needed his assistance, and I invited him to go to the meeting that we're at, and he ended up, so there was Jesus in a suit and tie, just loved it so much. And he actually did the closing prayer, and only two people there knew who was doing the closing prayer because everybody else thought it was just David that had shown up and was being emotional. The president actually recognized him as well. So I'm inviting our listeners to look around because there are people in your life that you'll feel something about them. And when you feel something about them, you should follow up on that because there's a message. A message should be delivered. And from the moment I met you, Eric, you've always had something fresh to say. And I suspect part of what Jesus said this weekend was, he plays concert piano, and he's also a concert opera singer, okay? World known, it turns out. And he said he never played other people's music. He always played his own because he inspired others. So if we can be in that space, and he's willing to have us all have his authority. And by authority, it's just that knowingness of who you are and what you're doing, as Eric's mother does, as Gail Ellen. Gail Ellen is one of the most... very present, very connected, very loving forms. And we've got them all around us. And if we talk to the highest spirit, I'm a torchbearer. I don't know, Eric, what you do that means the most to you. You know, I don't know. I know you do, I know the work you do, but I don't know what part of your work actually means the most to you. What would that be?
That's a good question. I don't know. I haven't really thought about it that way. I believe that it is putting us in touch with our multidimensional selves, that it allows us to reconnect with our original fullness, to our most spiritual and aware selves. And in doing that, one of the many gifts of this is that we return to a natural vibration of light, the light, the essence, the truth that we are. And it manifests, among other ways, in emotional, spiritual, mental, and physical, dramatic physical healings.
Yeah.
Light is an interesting concept. I mean, you know, without the light from the sun, the earth wouldn't live. Without the light emanating from our DNA, our bodies wouldn't heal and regenerate. And, of course, there's that light that we all return to and that we all come here from. And interesting things is that we discover in science, for example, plausible theories for the role that light plays. For instance, our bodies don't heal the way we were taught. We were taught our bodies heal through the biochemical model, but we know today that our bodies heal through frequency, vibration, information, resonance, and light. Light explains things that the biochemical model couldn't explain, how certain things can happen in certain areas of your body and instantaneously affect other areas, and that's pretty much explained by the wave property of light, the instantaneous response. We know that the speed of light plays an interesting role because we know that on Earth, most things go through an aging process, a degeneration process, a deterioration. It's called entropy. You know, wood becomes splinters, bodies return ashes to ashes, dust to dust. Even speed freaks increase their entropy, look older, faster, because what increases entropy is speed. The more the speed in the equation, the more the entropy. But something that we know today, through the work of Dr. William Tiller, Professor Emeritus of from Stanford University, is that besides the maybe 350 or so papers, scientific papers he's had published and the dozen or so books he's had published, he's known for what's called the Tiller-Einstein model of negative entropy, which sounds very complicated. It's really quite simple. Tiller means William Tiller. Einstein means Albert Einstein. Model means, well, hey, it's a model. And negative entropy means the reverse of entropy. In other words, what has been discovered is that once we attain or pass the speed of light, entropy reverses itself. Degeneration becomes regeneration. Disorganization becomes reorganization. Dis-ease becomes healing or ease.
That's what Hawking says, too.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen Hawking?
Right.
He says the same thing. He says that a dark hole, you know, the black holes that everybody's so afraid of that they'll get sucked into?
Mm-hmm.
What Hawking says, if you get sucked into one of those black holes, at a certain point, that black hole will explode and turn into light, and that's exactly what you're saying in a slightly different form.
Mm-hmm. So once we interact with the reconnective healing spectrum, it takes us beyond just the energy healing that we've had on Earth up until now. It takes us into a spectrum of energy, light, and information where technique is no longer required. Technique itself, steps, procedures, move this clockwise or counterclockwise, up or down, north, south, east, or west, become interferences, becomes us attempting to control from a place of not full understanding. Once we access the spectrum of energy, light, and information, the light that we access is communicated to the person with whom we're working in the healing process, and it reminds them of their natural vibration of light. Something triggers inside of them that says, hey, I remember this. This is me vibrating as light. This is me vibrating healthy. I think I'll do it again. And as they return to that natural vibration of light, that natural healthy vibration, anything denser than light, which tends to include pretty much most of our health challenges has pretty much nothing left to hold on to. So as appropriate for that person, those densities, those health challenges simply fall away. And healing truly is just that simple. And anything more complicated than that is designed to sell us something.
Right. And, you know, that's such fresh insight, Dr. Perot, into the whole dynamic of healing. And I know that the reviews, some reviewers have said that your book, Reconnection, is probably one of the best books on transformational healing and spirit medicine. And so I'm thinking that certainly this whole idea of frequency of light in terms of healing, you know, is part of that, even the spirit medicine part. Can you say something about that?
Well, I don't like to use the word medicine. I think that becomes a problem because we talk about energetic medicine and spirit medicine and this medicine and that medicine, and what we are doing is inadvertently buying into what medicine wants us to buy into. We're subconsciously using medicine as the denominator, as the high, as the overall encompassing concept.
I agree.
And medicine isn't. Medicine is about drugs.
Yep.
And it's about surgery. So what we really want to use is the word healing. Energy healing, not energy medicine. You know, spirit healing, spirit is one way of approaching the healing process, although spirit isn't really a broad enough word, but as we said earlier, we don't truly really have the accurate verbiage, the accurate terminology for that here. So, and the other thing about medicine is that it tends to be based on diagnosis, on treatment, on therapy, on symptoms, and on cures. Reconnective healing is specifically not reconnective therapy. It's not reconnective treatment. It's not reconnective curing. It's healing. And healing is about returning to a comprehensive state of balance. That's why you don't do reconnective healing treatments. There's no such thing as a treatment because a treatment requires a symptom. Now, unfortunately, in the healing world, we have not had a good model to follow. And so our fallback or default model has been a medical model, which tends to feed the ego. So people try to become medical intuitives, meaning they try to locate the problem visually or sensation-wise or using pendulums or asking their guides or muscle testing or O-rings.
Come on, I got my own pendulum and I love it.
Right. And really what they're doing when they do that is they're attempting to use something other than a scientific laboratory, but still attempting to diagnose the problem because they feel that once they diagnose the problem, they know where to move their hands or how to fix it. But of course, then that limits what we're able to do according to the limited perspective of our conscious human educated mind. And we start trying to do something instead of be something. It's in the book I mentioned, I said, if you break the word down diagnosis, you have die from the Latin meaning to. You have agnosis from the word agnostic, meaning don't know in Greek. And there you have it, two people who don't know, you and your doctor, so don't bother. You know, it feeds the ego to say, I found the problem and I fixed it, I, me, me, me. But it takes a higher center for someone to be willing to rise above that and say, I don't need to know what the problem is because fixing it is not within the parameters of my limited conscious human educated mind, nor are my guides telling me what to do, this, that, or the other, because we don't need that. We have a direct communication with God, love, and the universe. So if we're willing to rise above that, then what we learn how to do is to become the witness and the witnessed, the seer and the seen, the observer and the observed. And as we allow ourselves to simply observe and witness, we find that the greatest healings come about in that space. And the greatest rewards are our being able to simply witness these healings, because in the more that we see, the greater state of knowingness, not knowledge, but knowingness that we step into. And
like
in that enhanced state
here.
Of... Hmm?
I'd like to suggest something, because
sure.
we keep using the word healing, and when you're talking, I get that all we're really doing is aligning. And aligning
doesn't
happen.
That's another way of phrasing it. We're aligning
it
so that the interferences fall away.
Exactly. And see, healing, it still sounds like it has work to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, that's why if we view healing as balance, then we see it's something else.
Mm-hmm.
That's the limitation,
the
baggage we've assigned to the word healing.
Yes.
So now it becomes our responsibility where we can either change the word and then wait until baggage gets attached to it again, or we can remove the baggage and free the word.
That'd be nice, too.
Mm-hmm.
I can see alignment. It already exists. And what I experienced in your seminar and in the introduction before I ever took your seminar, I'm actually going to tell people about that when we get back. There's a couple of advertisers that we need to take care of right now. You're on the air with Gail Ellen, Dr. Eric Pearl, Dr. Val Kirkgaard, and Debbie Reachop will be on her way shortly. And we want to let you know that this program is brought to you by Protandim, Protandim. Check it out at our website. It's actually the second down on the list on the right. And I take one tablet every day for an entire month. It costs me $50. And then with that one tablet, I have started playing racquetball, and I have... doing all kinds of things that I thought were over in my life, and I did notice a difference with this. It's terrific for me. It's called Protandim. Just go over, click on it at the website, and hop on over. The other advertiser that we really like to get behind here, we cannot say that this man's tea cures cancer. We can say that he developed his formula when he had been condemned to actually having his tongue cut out. That's what they did in those days if you had esophageal cancer. Sir Jason Winter actually went to three different countries in the world, England, American Indians, and the Chinese, and he picked their best recipe for improving his immune system, and that was Sir Jason Winter tea. And I love the stuff, and I drink it all the time, and I invite you to go over to the website and find out where it can be picked up. Once again, that's Sir Jason Winter tea. We're on the air with Dr. Eric Pearl, Gail Ellen, Dr. Val Kirkgaard, and Debbie Ringchop is on the way. And our conversation today is divine transmissions. Anything you'd like to lead off with here, Eric?
Oh, you caught me off guard when you said it that way.
Not fair,
you're the interviewer. You interview.
Okay, I will do that. Debbie isn't here yet, and unfortunately she had a different code than the one that gets you on this conference bridge, and I've sent it to her, so I got my fingers crossed. Debbie Ringchop is a really amazing lady who's been taking care of her husband, who's been dying almost every year since I've known them. And he survives this incredible number of health challenges and so on and so forth. And I was wondering, in your experience, when somebody has health challenges that last a lifetime or most of it, for instance, maybe even Stephen Hawking, what do you think the message is in that? Or do you think it's just a training module? Or what do we have to say about people that are constantly rescuing themselves from death or continuing on when it seems impossible? As we were talking about my sister on Saturday, she's still going strong, even though her body is not. She's got a strong life force, and Steve definitely does, and yet their bodies don't match. Do you have anything you could say about that?
Did you ever see the movie Resurrection with Ellen Burstyn?
Yes, I did, many years ago.
Okay. Well, just for our listeners, I'll give a short synopsis of it. A very young Ellen Burstyn. It was done in, well, she was up for an Academy Award for this role in 1980, so I guess it was filled in 79. She played a newlywed. She and her husband were very much in love, and on their first anniversary or on his birthday or something, he was a blue-collar worker. She had secretly saved money away and bought him a sports car that he wanted. She shows up at his work. The two of them jump in the sports car to take it for a quick spin. They go off a cliff. He dies. She dies too. But she has the life after death experience and comes back to life from it. However, she's unable to walk. The doctors say she'll never regain the use of her legs. She ends up having to move out to the middle of the country somewhere to be taken care of by her somewhat curmudgeon-y older father. And there she is, spending most of her time in bed, trying to get her legs to work. And somehow or other, she finds a way to start to heal them, and she regains the ability to walk, although she still uses a cane a lot. In the process of her coming back and re-experiencing life as she regains the use of her legs, she discovers that she's accessed the ability to facilitate healings for others. It's a beautifully, beautifully scripted film. Wonderful lines in it.
Do you remember who that woman was? There was a woman that was in Glendale that this film was actually patterned after. I can't think of her name right now.
I don't think it wasn't patterned after her. She was a script advisor, and I know who you mean.
Okay.
I think it was Rosalind Brière.
Yes, it was Rosalind Brière.
Right.
I took her classes, and that's where I learned how to do past life regressions. I want our listeners to know that whether we remember everything or not, that there are things available here that just aren't A follows B follows C, and that's what I want you to get out of this program. What were you going to say, Eric?
So, the film was written on a much higher level than healing classes are usually given on our schools and studies. They go into a lot of detail and history and things that make us historians, but we learn what we're supposed to think and all what other people thought, but this was done on a much higher level. And at one point, Ellen Burstyn's character was, well, there were two points I wanted to make. At one point, her character was speaking with her grandmother, who was interestingly named Grandma Pearl. And she asked her grandmother why it was that some people got sick. She pretty much asked the question you did. And the grandmother, with just a very natural country homespun wisdom, said to her, some people need their illness to give love, some to get love.
Wow.
You know, some of us take our illnesses on for our own lessons, some for the lessons of others who are close to them. As Brian Weiss talks about in his book, Many Lives, Many Masters,
I love
as
that
well.
Book.
Yeah. Now, there's another line in that film that I loved, and it references what we were talking about with diagnosis. Because, you know, I mean, if you're a medical doctor, you're probably negligent if you don't diagnose your patient. At this level of healing, you're negligent if you do, but we fall back on that old-fashioned medical model a lot of times in the healing world, and they try to diagnose and determine the problem and fix it. And it's a very limiting approach, a perspective of limitation. And the example from this movie also was Ellen Burstyn's character at some point, she had decided to be doing some healing. So I think she had gotten a hold of a little tented area somewhere in the middle of a rural area, and people were coming from neighboring little cities or townships for healings. And at one point, Ellen had just finished doing a healing, performing a healing on someone. That person left the stage, and a woman was being carried up to be placed on that massage table, or that healing table, by, I believe, her two sons. And she was carefully placed on the table because she was unable to walk. She was in an amazing amount of pain. And Ellen walked over to the woman to begin a healing session. And a very well-meaning, well-intended, sweet little local country doctor comes running over to her and calls her aside and sort of whispers to her and says, listen, don't get your hopes up on this one. I've seen her x-rays. She has total degeneration of her third, fourth, and fifth lumbar spine. Don't expect anything. And Ellen Burstyn's character says, well, Doc, I haven't seen those pics. So I am one step ahead of you.
Oh, that's terrific. Do you remember the scene at the end? Well, I think it was the end. Do you remember when she's out in the desert with a little boy?
And she held on to the boy sweetly, yeah, to help him have his healing.
And you knew that because she had decided at that point to become anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was so moving because it was I knew that that little boy was going to be fine because of what she did with him.
Of course.
Just the same way I feel that people that I talk to now, when Christ gave me the silver coin and said, "I give you my authority." There's been one person that I've talked to and said that to, and I've said that I'm speaking to you with authority, and they, like, hear it now. It's like now people can hear Christ in me, and I believe we can transmit everything we've been talking about today. Gail will be able to go out and transmit something. You will be able to, because what we're transmitting is the possibility of accessing alignment in a higher frequency. There are no pictures with that.
Yeah. I understand that. Well, I strongly suggest for anyone who's interested in becoming a healer, for you can go into Amazon.com, I'm sure, I did at one point anyway, and get copies of this film. It's called Resurrection. Now, there are two versions of it. Make sure you get the version with Ellen Burstyn that was done in 1979 or 1980. There was a remake in the mid-90s with someone else. It really wasn't very good. It really wasn't very good. Get the one with Ellen Burstyn.
That's
it was Ellen Burstyn and Sam Shepard.
Wow.
I want to get it and watch it.
Oddly enough, I just heard that it was on TV the other night.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Well, the books are good, too.
Hmm?
Have you read either of those books, Gail?
No, I don't think so. Yeah,
well, those
I definitely
are really
want to
good
get
books.
Them. Definitely want to get them. You know, Dr. Pearl, I'm just remembering also that the basics of reconnective healing regarding helping animals to live happier and healthier lives also.
Well, the reality is animals are people in fursuits.
Yep.
Life is life and love is love. There is no different way to do a healing with animals. We teach a class called Reconnective Animals, but it's not about healing the animals differently. It's really just ways of learning to become comfortable and familiar with the animals and allowing them to become comfortable and familiar with you so you can be close and nice in their space and do that work.
Understood. And I remember when I was studying Qigong and Qigong healing, and I remember using it on some of our animals, you know, when they were ill and had challenges. And I remember watching the effect of it. It was extremely effective.
Now, we're teaching two seminars in the United States this year. We're teaching one in the Los Angeles area in Newport Beach, October 19th through 21, and one in Miami, December 7, 8, and 9. And I know that the one in Newport Beach is going to have an animals workshop on Thursday night before it begins. The seminar is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, October 19th through 21. But on that October 18th, the night before, there will be a Reconnective Animals workshop there.
Oh, that's terrific. We want to know that.
For people who are interested in that, sure.
Yeah.
Also, on Thursday the 18th, there'll be a Reconnective Yoga workshop because we've discovered that when people interact with Reconnective Healing so very often, so fairly instantaneously, their full range of motion or most of their range of motion tends to come back to them even if they've had problems and they've been trying for decades to get into the yoga positions, yoga asanas, or just do the normal everyday things that require a nice, normal, full range of motion at return. So naturally, the yoga teachers became interested, and many yoga teachers are learning Reconnective Healing to learn how to bring Reconnective Healing into their classes. And we'll be giving a yoga class there that our instructor will be bringing the Reconnective Healing frequencies into it with you to help you attain the positions with much more ease.
Well, that's perfect. And I just want to mention that I was in one of the seminars that I took, and I'm not sure which one it was. They actually demonstrated with the entire room that had about 200 people in it. They had us moving, and then they had us moving again about 5 or 10 minutes later, and the difference in our ability to release our bodies and move was just worth the whole thing itself. So there's all kinds of, I don't really want to call it magic in the sense of trickery. I want to call it magic in the sense of...
In the true sense of magic, before it had the baggage of trickery added
to
it.
Yeah, this is magic, and this is when you have sufficient knowledge, you can actually create magic that actually forwards the action, and that's what's happening here. And if Dr. Pearl and Gail and I stand for anything, it would be that everything that we're talking about is available to you, and you don't have to get it all figured out right away. There's plenty of opportunity available to you here, and I want you to know that on the website you'll see a picture of him, and if you go under his name, Dr. Eric Pearl, run your mouse over it, you'll see the reconnection.com, and you can keep yourself posted on what's happening. We also want to thank Charles W. Wright of Emergency Management Solutions, who wanted to be actually with us today. And he's got his hands full with an emergency going on, which is what he's supposed to be doing. We're going to be getting off the air here in right around 10 minutes. So I wanted to thank you for the conversation that we had on Saturday, Eric, about my attachment to my sister,
mm-hmm.
and how my sister might be passing on, but she has said that she doesn't want to. So we were actually taking a look at what could happen for my sister, okay? And you were advising me to be careful not to attach myself to either outcome, just to be there. And I wanted to just, I think that's something that I want to have you say something about to our listeners, that we want to listen and we want to be present, and we can't be attached to the outcome or we end up slowing the whole thing down. Isn't that part of what slows things down?
We want to observe and to recognize that healing comes in many forms. And I'll share this story with you, a brief story. There was a very well-known oncologist, a cancer specialist, who, when I was in Los Angeles a lot while I was still practicing chiropractic, but the healings had started, would call me occasionally to work on some of his patients. But he was always calling me on the patients at the very end stages of their experience. And he called me once and asked me to see this woman, and I said I would go at the end of the day after I finished seeing my patients. You know, I finished at around 7:30. I ate dinner. I went to the hospital. It was probably about 8:30 or later. I walked into the room, and the husband was sitting there in a sofa, pointed quietly to his wife, said that she was asleep in the bed. And I said, well, all right, I'll just walk over and begin the healing work. I won't wake her. And as I started to work, though, she, interestingly enough, did wake up. And she began to talk, and she was lovely and funny and charming and beautiful. Her head was shaved, but she had gorgeous almond eyes and a great smile. The husband came over and joined us. They told us funny stories of things they did with their friends and skiing trips, and we had such a great time and almost hated to leave. And I was getting ready to go when suddenly she developed a craving for two certain flavors of a special kind of ice cream, which you could only get way across another side of Los Angeles. And I didn't really want her left alone. I knew he'd be gone for a long time, so I said I'd wait. And he bundled up in a coat because it was a cold night and got ready to leave, and she also wanted a certain kind of cheesecake from another place. So I thought, all right, they'll be gone for 45 minutes. He'll be gone. I'll sit here with her and talk. So he leaves. The door closes. No sooner does the door click shut where her whole visage changes. Her face goes blank and pale, no expression. She just looks at me and she says, I'm going to leave now. And I said, oh, no, you're not, because I knew she meant she was planning on leaving the body. And she said, yes, I'm going to leave now. And I said, no, you're not. And I tried to think of everything I could, every reason I could give her not to leave. You know, your husband would want to be here. He'd want to say goodbye. I came up with everything I could think of. I just felt I knew if I kept her talking, I could keep her alive till he returned, which I did. It was one of the seemingly longest 45 minutes of my entire life. He walks back in with an armful of, you know, bags of cheesecake and ice cream and asked me if I wanted some, and I was not particularly hungry. So I thanked him very much, and I left. The next day I get a call from the doctor telling me that she had passed. By the way, when he came back in, she snapped back into her regular self. There was no clue of the experience that went on. It was like the Twilight Zone. So anyway, I thanked him and I left. I went home. The next day, the doctor tells me that she had left the body. She had passed. And I told him I knew she would, and he asked me how. And I explained the whole story to him. And he said, you know, she didn't just wake up when you walk in there. She had been in a coma for the past 3 months.
Hmm. Whoa, that just gave me chills.
Yeah. So, you know, what is healing? This man who had been sitting there for 3 months had his wife back for like a full 3 hours, not just partially or somewhat, but fully. She was awake. She was alive. She was funny. She was sharing. She was loving. She was joking. He was that way with her. They had each other for 3 hours. She had what she needed and gave him what she needed to be able to allow herself after all that time to leave.
And what he needed,
too. He had the gift of her. So what really is healing? Healing doesn't always mean that the person lives. Healing is that we live to our fullest, we get the most out of life, and we have as wonderful and as peaceful a transition as possible.
Do you believe we come in with maps? I've always thought that I had a map, and then I have choice points, and I can either... I'm a torchbearer, so I'm all sidious, altius, fortius, swifter, higher, stronger. But there are times that I don't feel swifter, higher, stronger, and I'm sure that if I didn't have a sense of my own, quotes, map, I might not be able to reach the higher frequency as frequently as I do, and I was wondering if you had any comment on that.
I think we come in with parameters, and our choices are to be made within those given parameters. I wouldn't quite consider it a map.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, in the last few minutes, we have Gail. Any comment? And then we'll have a last comment from Dr. Pearl.
Well, I just am really grateful for the work that you do, Dr. Pearl, and the alignment that you make available. And I just really loved what you said about live to our fullest, easiest transition as possible. I just really loved that, and I think that that is probably everyone's greatest desire.
Well, thank you very much for that.
Well, we've got one piece of breaking news that just came in from one of our correspondents. And the breaking news is this, that the bee population has been dropping like a fly, no more GMOs. And if you want the email on that, you can actually send me an email asking about it. GMOs actually cause bee colony collapse syndrome. And when a bee pollinates a plant, it carries its nectar into the gut to make honey. And that the GMOs actually contaminate that process, and the bees are dying. So as Einstein said, when the bees are gone, that will be the end of mankind on the planet. So if you want to see that video, what you really need to do is let Monsanto and the rest of the world know that GMOs are no good. They're bad for us. They actually cause sterility in the third generation. And I've got information on that from Optimum Health Institute. Also, for those of you worried about radiation poisoning, don't worry about it. Just go down to your local health food store and get some iodine, and that'll take care of you. If you go on iodine on a regular basis, hey, nothing bad's going to happen there. Dr. Pearl, one last sentence or two before we take off here.
Sure. Well, I just want to add that that seminar October 19th through 21 in Newport Beach on the Monday following that seminar, October 22nd. That evening there'll be a class for kids. I think it's ages 8 through 12. It'll be a 2.5-hour class that day. So if you're coming to the seminar and you want your kids to learn how to do that work, or even if you're not coming but you want your kids to attend the seminar, you can contact us and let us know. It's easy to find us on the website. It's just like the book title. The title of the book is The Reconnection, Heal Others, Heal Yourself, and the website is thereconnection.com.
This program has been brought to you by Kirkgaard Media, our radio partners, KoningCompany.com, Dr. James Murphy in Memoriam, DrValerie.com. We thank our producer and sponsor, C.W. Wright of Emergency Management Solutions, Sir Jason Winterty, LA Lifestyle and Protandin. A big thanks to our team at Voice America, Jeff Spinard, Nathan Jett, DeMond, and our friends at Cumulus Radio, Mike Vitale and Ron Simon. And thank you, Ron Hayes, for being a great research assistant. Merci beaucoup to Bent Migan for our theme music, Almost Ordinary People. Next week, invite a friend to listen. Write us at val@wakingupinamerica.com. And remember, Sitius Altius Fortius, and do a mitzvah today. Thanks for listening.
This is for all, this is for all the time you tried to find your sister or your brother. And you're not crazy anymore.
Thank you for joining us today for Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. Waking Up in America can be heard live every Wednesday on voiceamerica.com, and Valerie welcomes all emails at heavenincorporated.com.
This is for all you knew, pouring through. Now your heart is...